The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
And then how do we get these parents to fully understand the value of classical Christian education? You know, you most often our parents make a buying decision, if you will, for our cute little kindergartner, and then they wake up and they've got a fifth grader with hormones flying, or a sixth grader, or wherever it may be, and the decision has to be made over and over again. And I think this is something that increasingly, especially with millennial parents coming in, we're going to continue to struggle with. How do we create in the minds of our parents this value that will keep them sticky through whatever storms come their way? So really excited to have Luke Davis and Monica Watley sharing with us. So I think our format will be, we'll let each of them kind of set up the conversation, share a little bit of their story and background, and then we'll open it up for discussions and input from each of you. So without further ado, go ahead, Luke.
All right, good afternoon. My name is Luke Davis, and I serve as the headmaster of Seattle Classical Christian School in, surprise, surprise, Seattle. You'll have to forgive me. I took a red eye in this morning, and I've had three cups of coffee, so either this is going to go incredibly well, or I'm going to pass out halfway through it. What we're talking about today is near and dear to my heart. I'm a dad at school, as well as the headmaster, and if you're anything like me, you are still a perpetual student of what it means to govern, to lead, to produce a classical Christian education. Because it has been said several times today that we're giving away something we didn't necessarily receive. The task at hand we have is daunting. Typically, parents probably come in through your school in a very similar process that they do come into my school. They hear about it through word of mouth. They see an advertisement. They Google us, and they come in for a school tour. They fill out an application, come in for a parent interview. Their children are assessed. They're deemed to be a good fit, offer an enrollment, and they send back their enrollment form. And now they're in. So what's next? Their kids often are in kindergarten when they come in, and they're embarking on at least a 13-year covenant with us. And the thing is, they think the school's for their kids, and it is primarily for their children. But wherever those parents are at is setting up a ceiling, typically, for where their students can go. And so we need parents to know who we are, to want what we want, and to be driving our school in the same direction we're going. We do not want uninformed parents. And of course, we don't want parents that are against us. So often, when you're looking at your outline, task at hand, often when I encounter parents and we're sitting down either for a school tour or they're across my desk and mom and dad are having an official parent interview with me, I always ask them this question: what is your goal for your child's education? And wife tends to look at husband and blink, and husband tends to look at wife and blink, and that's a question they've never considered before. They're oftentimes more than capable of explaining to me what they don't want. We don't want this. We don't want a school driven by standardized tests. We don't want an insular, holy huddle community. We don't want a legalistic school. We don't want a purely pragmatic education. But they have no idea of what an education should look like in the positive sense. They very likely did not inherit this paideia, this form of education and enculturation that we call classical Christian education. And they have no vision for what needs to happen with their kids. I have not yet had a set of parents sit down with me for an admissions interview, and I ask the question, you know, what's the goal for your education, for your children? And they say, well, it says in Ephesians 6:4 that we're supposed to bring them up in the discipline, the instruction of the Lord, the paideia of Christ. Not once has that happened. Some people get close. So ideally, right, parents, we know factually, parents have this charge. That it doesn't say, you know, headmasters bring up children. It doesn't say government. It doesn't say church. It says parents. bring up your children in this paideia, this instruction of the Lord. And usually for these parents, I'm the first one to tell them about this charge, this burden, this calling they have on their shoulders. And we must be prepared to set them up for that. We have to tell them. Sometimes parents are fleeing from something to our schools. Other times they're simply curious and they've heard about it from a friend. But I've yet to have parents, ideally being driven to who we are, wanting it. And so we have to whet their appetite and set them on this trajectory. Because they don't know it, but they're unwittingly stumbling upon a treasure hold. So our job is to draw them further up and further in. And the way I say it in my school is I have a goal of making every parent a fit member for our board. I want to see parents that may go from zero to being knowledgeable, wise, passionate enough to say, I want to take on and I'm equipped to take on the visionary leadership for this school. That's what I want for my parents. I want them to become fit board members. So this also means knowing your audience, right? I'll put a plug in, Davies. I think last year you had a talk on millennials. Is that right? You can find that on the member portal. Worth listening to. Monica, I think, is going to talk more about the need for cultural engagement. So a bit of my story. I'm a Floridian. My home now is in Seattle. If you know your geography, those are far apart, not just in mileage, but in culture. And so when I came to Seattle, I needed to get a good handle of where my parents were. So my parent body at Seattle Classical Christian School, we're 5 years old. We are growing a grade of year, so we have kindergarten through fifth grade this year. They're fairly young. The median age is mid to late 30s. They are pressed by an ever more expensive city. I have an incredibly disparate parent group. There are about 36 families in the school right now, representing about 25 different churches. So huge number of different churches. Many of them are transplants from outside of Seattle into it. A larger proportion than what is likely more normative in your schools. A larger proportion of my families are dual income families, so both husband and wife are working. And finally, some of you may be aware of the Mars Hill story, how that large mega church in Seattle melted down a few years ago. And if my families have been part of our school for more than 2 years, they very likely were traumatized by that event. And the people in the Northwest already have a pretty individualistic, healthy suspicion of authority. And these families in particular have been scarred by abuse of Christian authority in an institution. And so they're already more suspect of me than and our board of what maybe other schools may know and experience. And so I say all these things not expecting you to have a similar experience, but because I had to take time to find out who my parents were. And that's worthy time taken. I'll tell you some of the ways I did that in a moment. And then finally, strategies to consider. And I'm hoping after Monica is done, I want to hear strategies from you, how you're seeking to engage with your parents in meaningful ways to continue to woo them further up and further in into our vision and philosophy. So I see it as part of my job not only to cultivate wisdom and virtue in the hearts of my students, but wisdom and virtue in the hearts of my parents. We have to be asking ourselves, how might we cultivate most effectively, most efficiently, not just to gain enrollments, but to, like I said, having that goal of making every parent a fit candidate for our board. So some of the things we do. Because my parents are Northwesterners, because they're millennials, and by and large, and because lots of them have this experience with a church melting down, they see traditional communication with a great deal of suspicion. So if I want to communicate a change in policy or procedure, if I want to make a big announcement or say, hey, we're going to be ticking a little bit to the left, or here's why we do something that their wider culture may seem controversial, I'm often not going to send that message first in written form. I'm going to sit down in front of my laptop, turn on the microphone and the camera, and take a quick 2 or 3 minute video, and either share that with the parent group, post it to our website. We have a series of videos for Seattle Classical Christian School saying SCCS is about such and such. So we had one, SCCS is about shaping hearts and minds. SCCS is about imitation. SCCS is about so on and so forth. Taking these principles of what we're all about, but they're attaching it to a face, hearing a voice, and they're able to receive that much more comfortably with softer hearts. My parents are much less quick to put a wall up if it's coming in a personal interaction. Books, since our parents have not received the education we're giving, we have this program called Classics in Community. And so every year we pick a classic that we encourage every family to go through throughout the school year. This past year we did Wind in the Willows. And so I introduce that at parent orientation night when they're coming back to school. It's real big. What's the class in community going to be this year? I challenge them all to buy a copy, to get an audiobook, to listen to it with their kids, to read through it, to enjoy this great work of literature. And then throughout the year, as I have different parent meetings, I can use examples from that common text to further explain and illustrate what our program is like. Of course, we have a parent Facebook page. We post articles to that. I'm going to go quickly through some of these. Events. I have a friend, Jonathan Saar. I don't know if he's in here. One of the things he's really good at with his school, Evangel Classical School in Marysville, Washington, is every chance he gets, he steps up on his soapbox. And so he's always explaining why whenever he gets the chance. Being a chief vision caster is so important. And local parentis is terribly important for our schools, and so I want parents in my school as often as they can come. So we make that invitation often and repeat it. We have parent boot camps. My parents are fairly brittle people. They can collapse like a house of cards sometimes. A lot, because it's a young school, most of the kids I have are firstborns, and so these parents have no experience so far with raising their kids. They're always at the vanguard. And so we do parent boot camps for big transitions. So we have a half-day kindergarten to a full-day first grade. So our first grade teacher leads a first grade parent boot camp at the end of summer to say, like, you need to know your kids are probably, at the end of the day, going to be exhausted. And it's going to look like this. It's going to last for about a month and a half. Here are some of the ways we go about ameliorating this circumstance. But you need to know it's going to come. Instead of the parent not expecting it and coming to me thinking, you're torturing my child. When this is a transition just about every first grader goes through. Because we're a young school and we want to give this vision of the whole trivium, we actually have some schools that are in our greater region that we encourage parents to go visit and sit in on logic and rhetoric level classes so they can see where their kids are going to arrive at. This has been really marvelous. We open up opportunities for conversations by gathering the school together in community. This will tell you a little bit about Seattle. Our moms gather once a month for a prayer night, and our dads gather once a quarter for beer. We go to a local bar and all hang out and drink and talk. That's just one way we do it. Another way is we are getting ahead of the curve by building a rapport with parents by sending out, you know, 2 positive emails in the first quarter, checking in with new families. I heard someone said it in the last session, they have a common lexicon. We call it a common language document. I have a Google Doc that we call it just that, common language, that all of our teachers, staff, volunteers are going to have access to. And I don't know why I haven't shared it with my parents before. We're going to be doing that next year. So we march out the type of conversation we would have in a disciplinary setting or different expectations we're going to have in different settings. When we have 36 families coming from 25 different churches, even though these people love and believe in the gospel, they tend to confront it very differently from family to family. And so I need them to know how we speak about it here at school. So when a parent sends a disciplinary note home and describes some of that conversation, parents have have a common overlap and understanding of how we're doing that. And then finally, we're all about transformation versus transmission. I think all of us are. We're wanting to cultivate wisdom and virtue in the hearts and minds of our kids as opposed to just transmit knowledge and skills. We're not an industrial modern school. We're a classical Christian school. And so the chief strategy we have for growing parents' love and passion for classical Christian education is by shaping their kids. We want their kids to grow in beauty, and as those kids become more beautiful by believing what is true and loving what's good, they are going to be the chief apologetic to their parents. All right, Monica, why don't you come up?
Well, I'm pretty sure I can go home right now with a new set of tricks in my pocket on how to engage parents and get them to value classical Christian education. My name's Monica Watley. I'm from Toronto, one of the first and only classical Christian schools in all of our great country. I believe there's a handful of us, maybe four right now. And we are a new school, and teaching parents to value classical Christian education is very difficult when they do not know what it is. They don't even know it exists, and they've never heard of it. They hear the word classical, and they say, are you super old? Do you sit around and write things with pen and ink? Do you wear a monk costume? That's the impression they have. You use words like the trivium, or pedagogy, or rhetoric, and they look at you with a blank stare wondering, what are you talking about? So it's Greek to our culture. And it's been a challenge trying to teach parents. Not only is it great, but it's really, really, really important for your kids. So one thing we had to do, as Luke alluded to, was go back and find what our culture is, because it's very difficult to understand how to teach them how to value something if we don't know what they value in the first place. So how are we going to convince them to spend thousands of dollars on something that they don't value? So the reason why culture is super important, I actually heard it by someone with Ethos Canada who runs a missionary organization in Canada. They go out and reach unreached peoples group with the gospel message. And the culture determines how the message is heard. So when I'm going on telling everybody, okay, classical Christian education is the most awesome thing in the earth, I'm saying it, but they're not necessarily hearing it because of what it is that they're experiencing. So culture, language, message. I had all the language. I was trying to learn all the buzzwords that you would all use commonly here. And I had all that language down pat, but I didn't really understand the audience and to whom I was speaking. An example of this is in Richardson's book, Peace Child, where a native goes to a neighboring community and thinks he's making this peace treaty with his neighboring community, and they're all friends, he's so happy. And yet he finds out very, very quickly that he, in fact, has been duped. And that the peace treaty is, it's part of a cultural practice in which a warrior tries to befriend somebody to essentially fatten them up and eventually eat them. So it wasn't bringing the gospel message across the way it was intended. Another key feature, so what I was going to say is Judas then became the hero in that message. When he shared the gospel message, it was Judas, because he was a traitor. He befriended Jesus and therefore was the hero. And so the people in the village were absolutely devastated when they saw that Judas was killed or killed himself. Another practice in this culture is that they share a peace child with warring communities. So when a community is at war, they will give one of their infants to the other village. And as long as that peace child's okay, then the both villages are at peace. Now, if there's an offense, they appeal to the peace child. Well, imagine the gospel message now when you think of Jesus being God's peace child, the one that we appeal to, all of a sudden Jesus then becomes the hero in this tribal community. So again, just to reiterate how important the culture is. So what is our culture like? Well, it's very much a soundbite generation. Everything comes in at breakneck speed. We have our smartphones, and I say we because it's our culture, right? It's not just our parents, it's our culture. Our phones are by our bed. We hear information every moment, and truth becomes what comes through blogs and opinions and statements, and the media is, who knows what's true among the media? So it's essentially a media overload that we need to understand about our parents. Another part of our parent culture is success. We value priorities, how well a student does in school, how well they do academically, but not only that, how well they run the race, how fast they are. Are my kids smarter? Are they brighter? Are they faster? And are they more artistic? These are all values as part of our culture. Our financial decisions match those of our unsaved neighbors. You know, as Will Rogers said, we borrow money we don't have to buy things that we don't need to impress people we don't even like. So these are all part of our culture. We've been trained in the last 100 years as part of the Industrial Revolution and the desire to be doers and makers and builders, not thinkers. So that's part of our culture and what parents expect. They want education as a means to an end. They want them to be able to get to do science so they can be a doctor, do math so they can be an accountant, not because God is the God of order and he's designed numbers the way they are for a purpose. Or they think public school's great. They had an experience in public school, and so they know that public school they were able to turn out all right in public school. They got a good job. They're doing well. And even if they see there's some issues with public school, they haven't saved the money to pay for private school. So that's another hurdle that is confronting our parents. Or they think their child needs to be salt and light. So regardless of how prepared their child is to be an apologist in a public elementary or high school, they think it's their job to be salt and light. And then there's those who are just not aware. I find that very common in our Canadian culture. I don't know how it is. We only have our own experience, and my experience may be very different than all of yours. But what I find in Canada is that the media hides a lot of the news, and a lot of things are going on underground. We find out bills are passed after they've been through three readings, and it's never touched the news. You know, just this past month, we have, you know, males who identify as females can now use the bathroom with young girls, for example. Or in November, we had the All Families Equal Act, which removes mother and father from the Family Act bill, and therefore you can have four parents who are no longer biologically connected. So our parents don't know this, and they're hearing it at school. It's a philosophy in school, but they're not aware of it. And so we become translators, essentially. When I talk about the culture, once we've discovered what the culture is, our job is to become translators. We need to find the right words to use to translate that message and understand that culture. What we found when we were a new school in Ontario is that there were very little resources that we could find. We didn't have a school that we could go down the street to, and so we connected with a couple schools down in the States, which was fantastic, but we had to look, the resources that we could find were very academic. And our crowd wasn't necessarily naturally academic. As we said, they weren't at classical Christian schools. And so we decided to do some major research and learn ourselves and discover a way that we could communicate that language to our parents in very simple and practical terms. Remove all the big jargon, to get our parents to challenge their thinking of why they were sending their kids to school. and why they had made the choice they were making of an educational institution for their child. So this is where the book came in, Shaping Hearts and Minds, Why It Really Matters Where Your Child Goes to School. So essentially, the book breaks down all these ideas. So it's written at a grade 7 level, doesn't have very difficult words. It's short chapters. We try not to make them too boring. They are independent in themselves so that if you're tired, you can put it down, but you can read the entire book in 90 minutes. And we found that by giving this resource to our parents, they suddenly began to understand why we were doing what we were doing and why classical Christian education is an amazing choice for their child. So in it, we answer basic questions. What is classical Christian education anyways? I mean, just to find a basic definition was very difficult for me. I mean, it was a huge learning curve to try to figure out what is it anyways? You know, breaking down trivium and breaking down all the system and the biblical worldview and integrated approach and all of these ideas that shape what classical it is. And then just the process. What does that look like for our new parent? One thing that was pivotal in this learning experience, I read J.K. Smith's Desiring the Kingdom and just the forms of worship and how we train ourselves. We become what we love, essentially. And so these acts that we do, you know, we love hockey. Canadians love hockey. So you go to hockey 7 days a week, you're going to love hockey. And it becomes essentially a form of worship. And so training the heart first was our focus and continues to be our focus, that yes, academics are extremely important, and that draws a lot of parents in, but no, that's not the foundation. We are made to desire God, and we are made to glorify Him, and so that becomes our priority. And talking about the concern and the danger with you know, making really smart kids. If they don't have morals, if they're lacking virtue, if they don't understand God's true purpose for their life, then they can become another clever devil, or as Roosevelt said, a menace to society. Part of it is understanding why we are where we are, how we got here in the first place. So there's a little bit of a history lesson, which of course, as I said, my dear husband was learning alongside me, and we were just pouring through information trying to figure out, how did education get this bad? What happened? And so part of it is there's an eighth grade test in from 1895 showing what kids in eighth grade 100 years ago knew, and maybe we aren't really progressing in our public education. So that's part of understanding the value. And then we touch on why public education isn't really neutral, and if you're ignoring God, that you're teaching that God does not exist, and so on and so forth, and that Christian schools don't all have the same purpose. Sometimes it's just to separate, but we're not, you know, as a classical school, we expose because we want people to be able to speak to that. And then at the very end of the book, there's a section on why classical Christian education may not be for you. And essentially, it's again to challenge their thinking and to speak to some of their excuses why they may not do that. So these are what happens with the book. That's one way we pack it out in enrollment packages. But we also have other ways that we get the news out. One is the parents. Our parents are our best advocates. So as we train our parents through these opportunities, we give them the book. We have parent advocacy packages where they have a summary. What is classical education? And why Inova Classical Christian School? So we have it all listed out for them so they kind of have a cheat sheet and they feel equipped to share, because our parents absolutely love it and value it, and they're the ones who bring the others in. We started 3 years ago with 8 students, and last year we had 30 students. We're at 48 this year, and we've had at least 25 applications for next year. And it's completely as a result of our parents as first advocators. Another thing we do is we host a free event once a year. We have a well-known speaker. Last year we had Greg Kokol. This year we had Gary Thomas. And next year we have Lee Strobel. And these men have come and they share with parents. They try to bless them. It's not a promotional piece for the school. It's an opportunity to bless a vetted audience, parents who already care about their kids. So the parents come in droves. They come to see this speaker. Because we host the Super Bowl, we get to have a five-minute commercial. We show the school there. And then while the speaker's there, we commit them to a pastor's breakfast the next morning. So the pastors from all the communities come. They get a free breakfast. They enjoy the speaker. We get to showcase our kids for a few moments. And then they become advocates to their churches for the school. It's wonderful. Just this year, one of the pastors was homeschooling his child or his children, and he was so touched by the call-outs and catechisms of the students that he enrolled his own kids in the school. So these are some of the practical ways that we get the word out to an audience who just never heard about classical Christian education. But as you mentioned before, you're the chief visionaries. You're the ones with all the experience. As a new classical Christian school, we are so desperate to hear your feedback on how you get parents, because you've grown to hundreds and hundreds of students, and obviously you have some successful tactics that are working, and we would just absolutely love to hear some of those.
All right. First of all, I just want to thank you both, and your very practical, boots on the ground, tactical approach is super helpful. I think that's the thing we're all struggling with. The content, I think we're fairly familiar with. The difficulty is how do you deliver it? And these ideas, Luke, of let's do it in a voice, in a quick message versus a text is really important. Monica, I'm so excited to actually finally meet you. I don't know if you've seen her book. I know at our school, it is now the de facto thing we hand any new parent that's a prospective or anyone that walks in, and we say, read this. This will help explain it in a way that is very concise and to the point. So brilliant job on that. That was really well done. So
yeah, we bought a case of Shaping Hearts and Minds this past year, and at our Christmas concert, we put every family's name on a little gift tag, wrapped it up in a nice ribbon, and as they left, each family got it as a gift, and every new family, same thing, Davies, will be getting one from now on. It's fantastic. Thank
so you, well done. I do kind of first question, then we've got about 10 minutes. I'd love to get your input on this. A question I have for you, too. I know that one of the struggles that we've continued to battle with is just time equals influence. So, again, parents will come and give you, it's kind of like premarital counseling. You do 50 sessions, but the minute they're married, they're never coming back unless they're on the edge of divorce. And you get 50 visits, I'm exaggerating a bit, from the prospective family. And as soon as they decide that this is a school, chances are they're busy with the rest of life and they're not coming through the door. So I think the way we deliver these messages to them, I like the idea of having a book read, and maybe some families will come to that. I just know the days of the 4-page headmaster notes and the Tuesday night come sit in the library for 2 hours thing doesn't work as well as maybe it used to. One thing that we're working on, and put a quick little plug in on this, is Basecamp Live is an idea of a 23-minute podcast. We're going to tackle a question like, why do we wear uniforms, or why do we teach Latin? Do a very winsome interview, and we know that parents are out there in commuting or on a drive, and they're going to listen to this content. And we'd love to have your input of topics and people to interview. We'll be doing that while we're here. But all of this is part of this group effort we're making to how do we break through to parents. So I guess what else? You've given some ideas. Is if you could, anything else that we've not heard that would just be a great, how do you break through the noise and get in front of them? Especially those who are already in the school.
So you administrators can probably empathize with this. The parents I get the most time with are the kids that are giving me the greatest amount of trouble. Yep. So I get plenty of 50-minute sessions with those parents, and sometimes they're the ones that need it the most. So one of the ways I do it is knowing that it's quick for parents, and knowing that we don't, because we're in the middle of the city, we're in the middle of downtown Seattle, we don't have a parking lot. Parents have to pay for parking if they want to come in. So they're in a load zone dropping off, and I make sure I'm out there every day at the beginning and end of day to have, especially if I see a dad that I don't see too often, walk up, shake, and ask a real pertinent question real quickly. You know, how are things going? How are you seeing about, what are you thinking about the school? What can I be doing for you?
That's really good.
And those come into a lot of good conversations.
I can just add to that the vice principal I work with said, oh, you have to do something on valuing classical Christian education and building relationship. And essentially she said, well, you just hand out your email to everybody and make yourself available to everybody. But to your point about relationship, essentially they're buying that as well. It's a relationship with your parents. They value it because you value it. They see your passion and they get excited about it. And it just builds from there.
Good. All right, let me open it up. Questions anybody have for these two? Yeah.
Mine's actually really simple. I had a quick Google search and Amazon search. I couldn't find the book for sale. Where do we get your book?
That's a good question. So essentially we released it last year, right before the conference. And so if you attended the conference last year, you may have gotten a copy of it. And right now we're making it available through the school, but we're just about ready to release it through a wider market. I did, however, bring a copy for every one of you here. So I have them at the back, and I want everybody to take one. It's a thank you for attending the session, but essentially it's an option. We created it, we made it widely available. We're trying to do it essentially at cost because we want your schools to grow. This is not a venture for any profit. It's an attempt to say classical Christian education is awesome. How can we get the word out in a simple form so that it will resound with parents and become meaningful? So, yes, before you leave the room, please take a copy of it and see if it's something that might work for your schools.
Other questions?
Oh, yes, just one really quick question or one really quick point. The school contact information is on the top right. However, the ones I brought today, the phone number's wrong, so that won't help you. There is an email address there, though. The printer, we had a mistake with the phone number, but the email address is correct.
Monica, you mentioned James K. A. Smith's You Are What You Love. And I'm curious about how to educate our parents in terms of social media with their kids. And let me be clear that I think social media and smartphones are one of God's great blessings. I heard Doug Wilson refer to a smartphone as 10,000 servants in your back pocket, and I think that that's totally true. But I think that the elephant in the room is the smartphone that we know all of our students have. Even if it's not snuck into the classroom, that's what they're doing actually instead of homework. How do we educate our parents about the fact that our students are becoming what they love, and it in reality is the Facebook or fashion websites that the girls do, the porn websites that the boys do, or just the incessant YouTube scrolling of just nonsense. That's what they're actually going for. And so I guess my point is, if we don't educate our parents about the fact that that's happening, it doesn't really matter to me how good our classical education is. Am I on base here, and are you seeing some of the same things? How do we address this?
Absolutely. It's 100%. I mean, that's why I started with the culture is super, super important, because the parents, they don't even realize. They're not aware. To that point again, is they don't realize what their kids are being influenced and how they're defining themselves and who they're serving. And so that just takes education. We have to educate our parents as much as we have to educate our children. And so providing parent sessions, we have a couple people in the Toronto area who are fabulous talking about social media and that impact it has on the child, and just be able to create some boundaries and speak directly to it. It doesn't matter necessarily how many likes you got. You're defining yourself by that. Calling it out for what it is. Because I think it's just part of the culture that it's, and it's happening so quickly that it's caught most of us parents off guard. We don't even realize it. And because it's such a small device, it's not monitored like a TV or another form, a movie or whatever. And so it's education, just continually educating our parents and actively setting that up within your school.
That's a good question. All right, I think we have time for one more question, buddy, or comment. Well, if each of you want to make kind of a closing word of encouragement to us, what would you like to?
Well, I'm just encouraged hearing from each of these speakers today to know how active and what a movement classical Christian education is in the States, because we feel very alone in Canada. We're learning this, and yet we have all these schools that are thriving and growing, and it's so encouraging. So thank you for the work that you're doing, for seeking God first and all that you're doing, and I just pray that God would bless you for your work. Continue to bless you.
So my encouragement would be your parents want this, and they may not know it, but they do want it. What we have to offer our students and that service to families coming alongside as stewards of Ephesians 6:4 and assistants to parents in that charge, most parents do not have any inkling about the riches that are held within your schools. And giving them that training, that education, that vision for what could be will enliven passions that have laid dormant. And I have seen my parents come in knowing nothing or even mildly leaning against who we are, and becoming passionate proponents. When we shared Shaping Hearts and Minds with our families last year, there were impromptu, spontaneous parent groups that wanted to get together and talk about the book. And to host dinners at homes. The families are really hungry for this. So remembering that you don't just have students in the classroom, you have students at home, is absolutely necessary to accomplish our mission. Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank them both for their great time and input. Thank you.